Boker Tov World. Today's daf is Besechet Sanhedrin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Irak Kedesh's daf Pehei, and we are holding on the second line. So yesterday, we discussed the question of whether a son is allowed to do medical procedures on a father, which could result in damages and chaburas and so on. Today, Bomi Neimer of Sheshes, Ben Moshe Yaseh Shliach Laviv Lahakoto Ulekalalot. How about another issue? How about if a Bezdin is Mechayev his father to get Malkus, or they are Mechayev the father to get a Nidui, or Mechayev a mother as a Sota to get the Orur? Would he be allowed to be the court's agent to do such things to his father? Or is there no difference, as far as a son is concerned, whether there's a mitzvah to do this or not a mitzvah to do this, it would still be osur for him. And here it's to go out bedavka to do the very things that the Torah said is makel vivimo or makalela vivimo. Amalahu, so Reb Sheshes answered to whoever asked him the question, well, I don't understand what you're asking. You are a person who's not related to this guy, right? Would you be allowed to hit him? Would you be allowed to be mekalel him? Of course not. So who was mater you to be a shliach bezdin? Acher mi'itiro? Must be, because normally you are prohibited. No person is allowed to curse another person, and no person is allowed to hit another person, and both of those are yisurei lavim, and nonetheless we allow everybody else, not only allow, but we consider it to be a mitzvah to do what the bezdin requires. What must be the logic for that? That is that kavod shamayim adif. More important than human kavod is the fact that the kavod of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is most important and cancels out other levels of kavod, whether it's to a father or whether it's to another Jew, which every person is chayiv in. And therefore, in the same way, why would there be a difference between a son and anyone else? If kavod shamayim is adif, then it should cancel the other levels of honor, essentially, that you're responsible in how you deal with other people, be it a father or be it someone else. Ask the Gemara, there seems to be a braita here that actually says the opposite. Now, this braita is very opaque, and that's exactly the challenge, is to figure out what in the world the braita is referring to, and then see whether it's really a question against Reb Sheshes. So listen to this beautiful lesson of the Rash of the braita. It's so sweet when the braitas do this. They construct something that is sort of like a conundrum, you know, and then throw it in your lap. Okay, what do you make of this? So, okay, what do you make of this? Take a look at this braita, and you tell me what it means. Meizvet. Uma mi she mitzuve lahakoto, mitzuve shelo lahakoto, mi she eno mitzuve lahakoto, eno din she mitzuve shelo lahakoto. Beautiful. So if certain situations create a mitzvah to hit somebody, it's nonetheless a mitzvah not to hit that somebody. So where there is no person who would be commanded to hit that somebody, for sure he is commanded not to hit that somebody. Now, that doesn't seem to make any sense, but there is one way that it would make perfectly good sense, which is that my lav, both of them are talking about where there is a mitzvah, meaning that the bezdin is trying to get this guy and to punish him, right? And the question is, one was talking about the son, and one was talking about another person. And therefore, what it's saying is that if a person who has a mitzvah to actually hit this individual, nonetheless, is not allowed to hit him more, because it says, you know, lo yosif lahakoto. So in the second case, where this is his son, and therefore does not have a mitzvah to go and to do this to his father, because his son is not meant to be a shliach bezdin, and therefore this price is against what Reb Sheshes just said. So certainly a son who is not given the mitzvah to be a shliach bezdin against his father definitely would have an iser to hit his father. I mean, what do you mean? We know that. Ah, but we don't have an azara anywhere, do we? Does it say anywhere in the Torah, do not hit your father or mother? No. It just says somebody who hits his father or mother, mot yumat. Okay, but remember that we only give onashim where we give somebody the hatra'ah, which is mentioned in the Torah. So where does it say not to hit your father? Therefore, what this braita is saying is that if even in a case of somebody who's not the person's child, and even where he has a mitzvah to hit him, because the Beis Din has told him, okay, you give this guy makas, he's not allowed to hit him even one extra bit, right? Because it says, lo yosif lahakoto, be careful not to hit him more than what you're legally responsible to hit him with. So Koshekin, the son, who is not supposed to be appointed to hit his father, would be chayev in that iser of lo yosif lahakoto. Okay, so then that would be the makar for the overall din, not to hit, which would include the father. And therefore, it's clearly saying that if the son was asked by Beis Din to hit his father, he is not mitzvah v'lahakoto. So that's, how does Rav Sheshes explain that? No, says Rav Sheshes, I agree, it's a very opaque braita. But an opaque braita gives us opportunities to penetrate the fog in a different way. Here's how I would read the braita. I don't think the braita is talking about the difference between the son and a non-son, and it's trying to figure out where is the azhara against hitting a father. We're not talking about a father. The difference in the two cases of the braita is like this. Lo kasha. Kan b'makom mitzvah, and kan shelo b'makom mitzvah. All that it's saying is that in a case to a regular guy who has no mitzvah to hit someone, so isn't it obvious that a regular guy is not allowed to kill, to hurt another person? If even a shliach Beis Din, nothing to his sons, if even a shliach Beis Din, who is supposed to be doing the mitzvah of hitting this person, he's mechuyev to be malka, that person, or to curse the woman with the sota, is not allowed to say anything or to do anything against that person, even in the context of carrying out the court order where it's going to exceed the legal authority. So Koshekin, if you have no legal authority and you're just a regular person, you are definitely going to be over on that iser of lo yosif. Not talking about a father. So it's just coming to tell you that you should know this issue of lo yosif, which seems in the Torah to be addressing a shliach Beis Din, kol shekein, it would be true of somebody else. That's all it's saying. So it's an azhara against hitting a person. That's all. So it's saying, if in a makom mitzvah, you're not allowed to hit more, in shelo b'makom mitzvah, you're not allowed to hit at all. V'chiktani. Uma b'makom mitzvah, when you're in Beis Din, have been appointed by the court. We're over there. You're mitzuveh to hit this guy, not your father, stop. And nonetheless, your mitzvah not to hit him even one extra time, mitzvah shelo lakoto. If you're not appointed by the court, and you're not in that context, shelo b'makom mitzvah, you're just another guy passing by on the street, where there is no mitzvah to hurt this person, isn't it obvious that the iser of hitting someone that is chal on a shliach Beis Din is certainly chal on you? Okay, so not necessarily, look, it may be not as elegant, but there's certainly nothing to stand in the way of interpreting the braita that way, says Rav Sheshes, so what's your problem? All right, we got another problem. Toshma, let's take a look at the next braita that also seems to take for granted that a son cannot be a shliach Beis Din. Here it says like this. Somebody's yotzei leharek. So he was already found to be chayev misa, and he is being taken out to be killed by Beis Din. So let's say he's going to the Beit HaSkila. And his son shows up and hits him or curses him. The son would be chayev, even though the father was on his way to execution. Mashenke, if somebody else came along and cursed the guy, or, I mean, this guy's being taken out, maybe because he's a mediach, I don't know. So people are very angry at him, and the mob is trying to get him. So if somebody else comes and does that, he is potter. Now, the Gemara wants to understand, why is there a difference between a ben and anybody else? I mean, if there's no iser of hitting somebody who's on his way to be killed, so why for the ben? Is it iser? What's the difference? So Reb Chisda explained that the case is talking about where the guy is supposed to be on his way to being killed, and he refuses to go out of the house. Right? I'm not going to get killed. Get out of here. Okay, so then the Besden appoints their sergeant at arms, you know, to get the guy out of the house. So that's what it's talking about. Misarvimbo, let's say it. They're saying, "Get, come on, buddy, come on." And he says, "Absolutely not. I'm not going out of here." And therefore, the difference is that if the person that was sent was this guy's son, so even though he is doing what the court has ordered to do, pull this guy out of the house, even if it means breaking his arm, or curse the guy and put him into cherem if he doesn't listen to the court order. It's talking about that case in which somebody else is supposed to do what the mitzvah is of the Besden, but a son is not supposed to. So you see from here that Rav Sheshes is wrong. A son is not mitzuvah to be a shliach Besden. And if, in fact, he would act against his father, he would be chayiv. That's the simplest explanation for the difference between his son and another guy, right? So how's Rav Sheshes going to explain that? Rav Sheshes says there's no difference between a son and another guy. So, I mean, look, I don't, whatever you're going to say, this braita is definitely saying there is a difference between a son and another guy, all right? So now, how are you going to explain that difference in a way that is not a contradiction to the fundamental assumption of Rav Sheshes, that a son is not allowed to, is allowed to be a shliach, if over here it's making a difference between a son and a regular shliach bezdin? Ah, well, Rav Sheshes will obviously learn that it is not talking about where there is a mitzvah to get this guy out of the house by breaking his arm. It's talking about where he came to accompany this person to execution. The guy is perfectly willing to cooperate with the officers. However, as we know, many of these so-called policemen are birionim. And if they have an opportunity to grab the guy and bust his arm as they're pulling him out of the house, the guy says, I'm coming. Get out of here, you bum, you slob. You should just drop dead. And they break his arm and so on, you know. And the guy that they're pulling may be George Floyd for all you know. Anyway, so in any event, what happens over here is that if it's somebody else who does that, he's not going to be chayiv. But if a son does that where there's absolutely no reason to be, the mitzvah, I agree that if there would be a mitzvah, he wouldn't be chayiv. We're talking about there was no mitzvah. I don't understand what you're saying, Rav Sheshes. So if there's no mitzvah, why is somebody else putter? Then somebody else should also be chayiv, no? No, I'll tell you why. Because if we're talking about someone else, then he is assaulting a person who, for all intents and purposes, might as well be dead. Because, look, he certainly isn't worth anything. So nezek against this person has no meaning. I mean, he's on his way to execution. So for all intents and purposes, he's a dead man walking. Masha Enkin, when it comes to his son over there, it's irrelevant whether he's a dead man walking or not. Because the issue of the son is the relationship between the son and father, not to the chashivas of this person as being alive or dead. As a matter of fact, even if he would be dead, the son would be chayiv, as we'll see later. But now, wait a minute. Rav Sheshes himself, he says that if a person is fast asleep and somebody goes and embarrasses him, so he uncovers him, let's say, right? Then the person ends up never waking up. He dies in his sleep. So if that is the case, that person never suffered the pain of the embarrassment that was done to him because he never found out about it. Nonetheless, it's Dafka Rav Sheshes of all people who says that you are mechuyev to pay because you're also causing damage and embarrassment to the family. And therefore, you would be chayev to pay the family. So, I mean, why over here? If Rav Sheshes is the one who says that there's a chiyav in attacking a person for the impact that that attack has on the family, so why over here can Rav Sheshes get away with saying, well, it's talking about his dead man walking, and therefore his children are dead men walking, and his wife is dead woman walking? I don't understand what the answer is. Rav Sheshes holds that you are mechuyav anyway, so this doesn't make sense. Well, what we're talking about when we say over here that you don't have to pay, it's talking about where there was no real monetary level of damage. So it's like a minor thing, and therefore you can't take him to court to get him to pay. Oh, wait a minute. That's even worse. If you can't take him to court to pay, then you have to give him malchus, because Amar Reb Ami, Amar Reb Yochanan, someone who attacks a person where there is no monetary compensation involved is Dafka Chayev Malchus. So he called him a Shavapruta Loke. So now, why do you say he's Potter if this is a person, not the son, this is a person who attacked another individual who was willing to cooperate, and this guy refuses to accept his willingness and breaks his arm instead? What's the difference if he's on his way to execution? What about the damage, according to Rav Sheshes, to the whole family as to how watching their father or watching their husband being treated in this fashion? You think George Floyd's family didn't sue? Of course they sued. So in this case, saying, well, it wasn't worth any money, that makes it worse. If it wasn't worth any money, then we should take him into court and we should give him malchus. So why does Rav Sheshes say he's potter? Nah, it says Rav Sheshes. I mean, he's butter from paying. But of course he's going to be high of malchus. I mean, that's his din for malchus. We're not talking about that. I understand. So then, Rav Sheshes, if you're contrasting the son with the father, so then when you say that the son is chayev, you mean the other person is potter, meaning on money, and the son is chayev, meaning on money. And why is the son chayev on money if the case is that there was no money? What are you saying? So what must you understand when it says the son is chayev? It means the son is chayev for whatever a son is chayev for hitting some father, which is chayev of misa, right? Ela bedinai. So then when you say that the other person who's not a son is potter, you mean he is potter from his din, which is the malchus. So we're back to the original question. Well, I understand what the difference is. What is the difference between his son or somebody else? This is not a solution. Okay. I'll give you yet a third way to explain the difference. Difference is that you're potter from hitting this guy or cursing this guy, because when the Torah asers cursing someone, it bedavka says nasi be'amcha lo ta'or. You're not allowed to curse a nasi in your people. But somebody who is chayav misa has not been acting like someone be'amcha is be'ose ma'aseyamcha. He is acting like a ben Yisrael. If this guy is being led out to his execution because, I don't know, he's a murderer or whatever it is, he's obviously not a nasi ba'amcha, is he? I mean, he's misbehaving in the extreme. So therefore, if you go ahead and you curse him, so then you're not chayev. Masha Enkein, the relationship to the child has nothing to do with amcha. It just has to do with the fact that he's this person's father. So for the son, you would be chayev, but for somebody else, you would be potter. No, says the Gemara, wait a second. That's all very nice about the part about cursing him, but that's only in cursing, it says, nasi ba'amcha. But what about hitting him? You said even if you're hitting, where does it say that if you hit someone who misbehaves, so you're potter? Does it say that anywhere? Oh, yes, it does. Because we're makshinan haka'a leklala. Basically, the Torah puts together makia vivimo or makalela vivimo. So apparently, whatever the dinim are in terms of klala, which is only ba'amcha, so too is the din with hakar. This is no good. This is no good. Because, by the way, the other possibility is it's not based on the hekesh benogea makia and makalela by over vivimo. It just means mametzinu. That if, when the Torah is makpid against hurting another person, when it comes to cursing, it says that it's only when he's a person who's behaving, he's ba'amcha, so the same thing should be true about hakar. Okay, this we'll see later on, is a machlokas. In any event, if you're telling me that that is the azara, I got news for you, then it would apply to his son also. Why? Because remember, we don't have any other mocker of the is. Where does it say not to curse your father? Where does it say not to hit your father? We just learned it out before. It's the same place that it's usher to curse anybody. So if your moods are not to curse, so then if it's your father, your moods are not to curse him. except that the onish is different. The onish is an onish of Misa. And now you're saying the same thing is true of Hakor, the Lo Yosef, which applies to a son like it does to anybody else, is also limited by the idea of Ba'amcha. So then again, you're back where we started from. We don't understand the difference between Bino and Acher. And now you've just gone full circle. I still don't understand the difference between Bino and Acher. Iyachi Bino Nami. So we're just running around in circles over here. No. It's talking about that he did tshuva. So he is now Ba'amcha. You're right. He misbehaved. He murdered someone. He's on his way to execution. So what? So because he once misbehaved, so now you're not mechuyev to treat him like anybody else? Now you're allowed to kill him? I don't understand. You have to kill him in Besdin? Now you have a right to hit him? Now you have a right to be mekalel him? He's a bal tshuva, as the Rambam says. Once he did tshuva, he is in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's eyes, beloved and sweet and everything the way that he was before. So why in the world is it okay to hit him? Oh, come on. So again, we're going around in circles. So if we're talking about a case where he did the tshuva, and therefore the son is chayev, so then anybody who kills him, who hurts him, should be chayev. So what's the difference? So then, Acher Nami. Oh, gosh. Yeah, I mean, so three different explanations you're giving me. None of them hold water. I mean, this business of trying to make this work out according to Rav Sheshes is getting a little bit extreme, isn't it? No, says Rav Mori. I have an answer. Because the Ba'amcha would mean Mikuyam Ba'amcha. He has to be a survivor, somebody who's got a future. This guy's got no future because he's about to be killed. Rav Mori, you're doing the same thing everybody else is doing. So, and now, if it's somebody else, it's also, but what about it? You're saying his son. And if it's somebody else, there's no difference. You're saying as Ba'amcha, and his son is also exactly the same. Ah, it's not, says Rav Mori. I got news for you. Because where we're talking about a normal person who's not a son, if he curses an individual who is dead, he's not going to be over unless he Ba'amcha lo tahor. But if a son curses a father who is dead, he is chayev. And we learned it out from a special extra pasuk. That's the difference. So therefore, even though we're talking about a case where he on his way to execution, and therefore he's not mekuyam ba'amcha, but for a father, mekuyam is irrelevant because even b'mitato there's an iser. That's the difference. So at last, we get an explanation for how to work this out, a libidur pshishis. Okay, bottom line, do we have like any kind of proof about what the halacha is here? So my aviyala, tell me the bottom line. Omer Rabba Baravuna v'chintana devei Rabbi Yishmael. Look, what the Braita ends up saying is that actually we avoid making a child a shliach besta. But there's one place where we're not machmir to use, say, a son is inappropriate. And that is in a case where we're talking about a mesit. So if the father was a mesit and he's trying to get other people to do avodah zarah, so his father became a missionary, over there the son is able to be a court agent to get his father knocked off. Sharei amra Torah lo tachmol v'lo tachaselav. Do not have any normal compassion for this person. Don't try to save him in any way. So therefore, the Rabbanan would not even be makbid in that case to make the son, they would allow the son to be the shliach bes. It looked like we see by Chizkiyahu HaMelech and the way that he went out to be mevazachas because Dafki wanted to make that impact on people because his father actually was a mesid in that sense of showing people how to, Sir Richard, you're on camera. Can you imagine? And Trump himself doesn't listen to the Daf Yomi? What's with you, man? Trump doesn't listen to the Daf Yomi?
Yeah. He's going to school.
Okay. Now, we want to get into the specific denim of a Maka of Ivi'ima. So we actually talked about this before, that we mentioned yesterday that today, and tomorrow is today, we're going to learn this Mishnah, where it says, Amaka of Ivi'ima, Eno Chayev Ad Shiyase Ben Chabura. So we understood that it's a din in Nefesh, and that therefore you have to only, in a case we actually caused some Hotsa'as Dam, which would mean either literal bleeding or bruising, which is the same idea of a Chabura, Masha'in Kain, by the normal person, which we understood is different, as we'll try to see in the Gemara. Now, what's interesting is that fact makes it clear that you cannot be chayev on hitting a parent after the parent is dead, because you will not cause bruising or bleeding in a dead person. So even though you could say, well, theoretically, we learn that the makah and the makalal is the same. Yeah, okay, if you can figure out a way to hit a dead parent and cause a chabura, go right ahead. But, and then you'll be chayev misa, but there is no such way. And therefore, in a practical sense, a makah of a ve'ima would therefore not be mechayev after the death of the parent. And zeh chomer b'mekalel b'makeh. Because a mekalel la'achar misa, as we're going to see from the posik, is chayev. But a makeh la'achar misa is potter logistically. Only logistically, but still. Practically speaking, is potter. Tana Rabbana. Now, we've got a number of different psukim, as we already started speaking about yesterday, when it comes to the din of hakras nefesh, and we have today a number of different psukim when it comes to the chiyav of mekalel of ve'ima. Now let's take a look at the pasuk in Kedoshim. In other words, we've been thinking about the sugya from Mishpatim, because that's what we learned most recently, and that's the makeh aviv v'imo mot yumat, followed by something that seems unrelated, which is gonev ishu micharo, which of course is going to be the next sugya that we learn right now, and then comes the pasuk mikalel aviv v'imo the mot yumat. So that's what we've been thinking until now, but the problem is that there's another pasuk that seems very repetitive, and that's the pasuk in Kedoshim. So what does it say over there? Ki ish ish asher yikalel et aviv et imo mot yumat aviv v'imo kilel damav bo. Now this is another one of those psukim that we found so often in Kedoshim. You'll note that this is almost a style of Kedoshim. You know, so we're going to say imchahi kalatchahi, aviv imo kilel. Well, obviously, you just said that. You said that if ish ish asher kalel aviv imo mot yumat, so why are you repeating aviv imo kilel? And therefore, damav bo. I'm confused, right? So, in the Kedoshim context, so what we see is that we've got this extra extension of the iser in terms of aviv imo kilel. So what that means, the extra posek is coming to tell me, even li'achar misa. So therefore, there is a din of klola li'achar misa. Because I would have thought, honestly, myself, I mean, I would have thought, look, if we find that the Torah is b'chayev you for makeh avivimo, and we find that the Torah is b'chayev for mikalel avivimo, I would have said myself, the fact is that logistically, there is no way to be mechayev a makeh avivimo after the parent's death, right? So makeh eno chayev ela michayim, because you have to cause bleeding. Afa mekalel, so I would say, okay, so then if that's the case, then probably the same thing is true of a mekalel. And the mekalel is potter if the parent is no longer alive. And, you know, besides that, I mean, it's even a kavachomer, because when it comes to makeh, does the Torah ever make a difference between being makeh a hoylech maisim amcha? No, it doesn't say umakeh nasi ba'amcha. No, that's only a din of a mekalel. So if we're going to respect a person and not curse him, over there it's only if he's osa maisa amcha. But hakah is more chomer. And there the Torah says, look, you can't lay a finger on anybody. I'm going to hang how he's acting. That's not the point, right? So if you're telling me that even actual physical hitting a parent is not usur after his death, so it's a kal vachomer. If a makeh were over there, we're much more machmer because we don't care how what his behavior is. Sha'asa b'shalo ka'amcha k'ba'amcha. A mikalel, we're over there. No, only osur ma'aseh amcha is included. If he's not osur ma'aseh amcha, then you're not osur mikalel. So then we're not going to be as machmer on a mikalel, right? So then we're also not going to be as machmer in terms of saying that you should be chayev if the parent is no longer alive. So eino din shalochia bolacha misa. That's what I would have said left on my own devices. Therefore, I need this extra pasuk to say that no, since it repeats for no discernible reason, aviv imo kilel, must be that that's coming to include that it's there is a chiyav even le'achar misa. So Talmud lomar, aviv imo kilel, le'achar misa. Now, wait, hold on just one second over here. That's not so simple. Because you remember we have that machloka several times about when the Torah uses a vav, does the Torah mean and or does the Torah mean and? And if you want to turn it into or, you're going to need a special pasuk. So now look, according to Rabbi Yonatan, I do not need to use a pasuk for and or. Therefore, this extra pasuk of Avivi Mokilel is actually extra. So because of that, I use it for Le'achar Misa. But according to Rabbi Yoshia says that if it doesn't say or, then it means and. So I need this pasuk to tell me either or. Here, let me remind you. Michael Amema, here is the actual machlokas between Rabbi Yonatan and Rabbi Yoshia, the Tanya. So when the pasuk said, we saw before, ish, asher kalel aviv v'imo, Mot yumat avivi mo kilel. Pamavbo. What is that? So let's darshan it first of all. Why do we have two ishes mentioned? Ish? You could just say hamikalel avivi mo. Why are you stressing ish? That is to tell me that even in a case where it's not an ish, it's a bat. And even in a case where it's not a normally defined ish. So we have these middle sexes. So maybe it's a tumtum. Maybe it's an androgynous. Would that also be a normal genetic relationship with the father and the mother, and that's enough to be mechayev or not? So we have this extra pasuk to tell me I don't care genitally what it is. So male, female, tumtum, androgynous, as the same iser. Fine. Next word is Asher yekalel et aviv ve'et imo. Now that sure sounds like that this person, mot yumat, if he curses his father and his mother, so ein le'ela aviv ve'imo, it's only if he curses them both. How about if he only curses his father and doesn't curse his mother? Or only curses imo and not his father? What would be the din there? That's why it says Rabbi Yoshia, aviv ve'imo kilel. Now note, that in the beginning of the pasuk it says, Asher yikalel et aviv. The word klala is next to the father. In the end of the pasuk it says, avivimo kilel. The word kilel is next to the mother. Aha! That's to tell me whether it was focused only on the father or focused only on the mother, it's still going to be chayiv. That's why we have the repetition. But that would mean that according to Rabbi Yoshia, we do not have that repetition to teach me Achar Misa. So how do you explain it according to him? But before we get to that question, let us listen to the Shita of Rabbi Yonatan, with which we're very familiar. Rabbi Yonatan says, the use of the letter Vav always means and or. Mashma. Shneyem ke'echad. Unless it says beferish both, then it means only together. But if it doesn't say beferish both, it clearly means either or. So where do we find that? Lo tacharosh b'shor uvechamor yachdav, both. Oh, okay. So if you wanted to say that you can't curse or you're chayev for cursing father and mother, then saying avi ve'imo doesn't imply that. You'd have to say avi ve'imo yachtov. Since it doesn't say yachtov, I don't need an extra pasuk to tell me that it applies either to a father alone or a mother alone. So according to Rabbi Yonatan, we have an extra pasuk. But according to Rabbi Yoshia, we don't have that extra pasuk. So how does Rabbi Yoshia minole, how does Rabbi Yoshia know that there is an iser even li'achar misa? Well, that he learns out from Umikalel Aviv V'imo Mot Yumat. Okay, that is the pasuk in Mishpatim. Fine. So that he learns from there. And there, since it says an additional klala mot yumat, and we said that over here in Kedoshim, why do we need two psukim, one in Mishpatim and one in Kedoshim? So therefore, this is referring to Liachar Misa. Does that make sense? Yeah, actually, it does make sense. So wait a second. So according to Rabbi Yonatan, what does he do with this extra pasuk? Because Rabbi Yonatan essentially has two extra psukim. He has the Aviv Imo Kilel Mot Yumat in Kedoshim, and he's got this extra pasuk of Mikalel Aviv Imo Mot Yumat, because we already had Ish Ish Asher Kalel Aviv Imo Mot Yumat. So why do I need to know that twice? Ah, that is to tell me that even though genitally, it's not Ish, but it's a Bat or a Tumtum Androgynous. What? But I thought we learned that out from Ish Ish. We had already learned that out from the double word Ish in Kedoshim. So why wouldn't Rabbi Yonatan learn that out from Ish Ish in Kedoshim? Why would he need the Pasuk, a whole repetitive Pasuk in Mishpatim? Tepuremi Ish Ish. No, because Rabbi Yonatan Shita is that those kind of doubled words are just the way that people speak. It's just literary. And therefore, to say Ish Ish just means anybody. But it isn't necessarily coming to be Marba. So they, well, what do you mean HaKadosh Baruch Hu just picks up on the dialogue? Yes! Dibra Torah Kelashon B'nei Adam. This is Rabbi Yonatan Shita all over. And that you cannot be Dorish the type of language that is a normal way for people to communicate. Therefore, he uses the Pasuk in Mishpatim to tell me that it's even a bat or a tumtum and androgynous. Okay, now, what I don't understand is that it turns out that there is a chumrah in the makeh over the mekalel, and you didn't say that there was. You said it turns out that actually the mekalel is more chumrah. Why? Because he's chayev le'achar misa. And the makeh is not, but you should have said in the Mishnah also the inverse. Why doesn't it say a makeh is more chomer than a mekalel? Because when it comes to makeh, so then asaba shelo ba'amcha ki ba'amcha, ma she'en ken b'mekalel, the pasuk of nasi ba'amcha lo to'or is only in terms of klala. But when it comes to makeh, it doesn't seem to make that difference. Now, obviously, this Tana is not the Tana that we had before, who said Makshina Naka Aleklola, right? There we said on Amin Aleph, we said Makshina Naka Aleklola, whatever the din is by Kalola, where it says Ba'amcha, that's the din of the Makha. So we haven't been going like that Tana, because we said it's a Kal V'chomer. It's a Kal V'chomer because, after all, there's no difference between Amcha and Lo Amcha. What are you talking about? We just said that we learn out one from the other. So there's obviously two shitas in this. We had the Braita that we had before, where it says that we are Makshina Nakola Klola. And now we have this Mandi Omer who says, no, 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 for sure not. So if we had that Mandi Omer in the Braita that says, Va'od Kal V'chomer, so then why didn't the Mishnah actually say that? The Mishnah should have said, on the one hand, HaKlola is more chomer because it's Le'achar Misa, but on the other hand, HaKa is more chomer because the behavior of the father is irrelevant when it comes to HaKa. And it is relevant when it comes to Klola. So obviously we're more makbid on HaKa, right? Masha Enkein B'Mekalel. No, because the Tana of the Mishnah, Dafka, does agree with that Tana that we said before. And he holds it where Makshinan Hakala Klala, in which case, whatever the din would be, if it's Ba'amcha in terms of Klala, it's Ba'amcha in terms of Hakala. Oh, okay. So it means you're telling me we have actually a Machlokas Tanoim here. Are we Makshinan Hakala Klala or not, right? And is that actually a well-established Machlokas Tanoim that we've seen elsewhere? Because I would suggest that it's the same Machlokas Tanoim. Here, listen to this in these brises, and you'll see what I'm referring to. Lema hanitanoi kanitanoi. One brisa says like this. If somebody hits a kuti, now here, we've been talking about kuti, and remember, throughout, lately, as not literally kutim, but the censorship kutim, where the Gemara puts in the word kuti instead of talking about goy or akum, right? So, okay, so they view it as this hang-up that the rabbis have about the Samaritans, which is why they go ahead and make the Samaritans the good Samaritans, right? But in this case, it refers literally to a kuti, and the question it seems to be, so one brita says, when it comes to a kuti, you're not allowed to hit him, but you are allowed to curse him. And another brita says, you are neither have any kind of problem of cursing or of hitting when it comes to a kuti. So there's obviously a machlokas here. What is that machlokas? So we made the original assumption that the machlokas was not about whether kutim were actual gerim. Everybody agrees they were actual gerim, and then they started doing avodah zarah, and now they have a din of anybody else, like any Jew who did avodah zarah. So then, what's the machlokas about whether you're allowed to hit them or not? Ah, very simple. The brayta that said that you're allowed to hit and curse holds that we compare hakol l'klala. And the brayta that said you're allowed to curse, but you're not allowed to hit, holds that we're not makshinan hakol l'klala. That would be a very straightforward way of explaining the machlokas between the two brayta. So that's the same machlokas between our Mishnah, the Tana of our Mishnah, who doesn't list that there's a chumrah of hakol over klala, and the Tana of the brayta who says that it's a kal v'chomer, and that if hakol you... there is a greater chumrah that we don't care about his behavior. It's all right. I mean, obviously, that brayta does not hold makshinan hakol l'klala. So l'chora, we do have another machlokas tanoim well established that goes along the same lines. No, this is the Gemara Mapiton. What makes you think that that's what we're talking about over here? A very simple explanation. Maybe everybody agrees. Lo makshinan hakol l'klala. So what's the machlokas? The Tana of the first brayta holds that kutim are normal gerim. That was a big machlokas. Whether since the kutim only became gerim because they were being attacked by lions, right? So they're called gerei arayot. They are gerim because they were feeling that God is angry at them, because they're not Jewish, and they're living in Eretz Yisrael, and he's punishing them. We have to learn how to live like Jews in Eretz Yisrael. So that means that they weren't really gerim. They were only gerei arayot. That's the machlokas. So the Tana of the first brisa holds that they are regular gerim, and because of that, you're not allowed to hit them. Whereas the Tana of the second brisa holds that they're not real gerim. They're phony gerim. They're gerei arayot. So because of that, there's no isser on anything, because the isurim of hitting are only on people that are part of Yisrael. And therefore, you can both hit and curse them. No, it's not true. Because if that's the pshat in that second brisa, that they would be considered to be goyim, how do you explain the fact that Aina Diktani Allah, the same brisa continues on to say, but when it comes to the dinim of how to treat their shor, and whether there's a difference between a shor tam and a shor muad, we treat them like Jews, not like goyim. Because By Goyim, there's no nafkamina between a short tam and a short mu'at. There's always full tashlumin. So how do you explain that? Obviously, we don't hold that they're Goyim. And then we have no choice. We have to go back to the way that we understood it. Shema mina bekesha plige shema mina. The main issue is whether we make that hekesh between haka v'klola. Now, what's very fascinating is why, in fact, is there a machlokas? Do we make this hekesh or don't we make this hekesh? Well, guess what the machlokas would be dependent on. Listen to the pasuk. Ma umake aviv v'imo mot yumat v'gonev ishu mecharo v'nimtza biyado mot yumat umekalel aviv v'imo mot yumat. Woo! That is weird. Right in the middle of discussing aviv v'imo, we sort of end up talking about something else, which just happens to be the next Mishnah, but we won't think about that. So the question is, does that something else, namely the pasuk of gonev ishu mecharo v'nimtza biyado mot yumat, does that mean that the Torah b'davka wants to separate out the dinim of makeh aviv v'imo from the dinim of mekalel aviv v'imo? Or does the presence of that other pasuk in between not invalidate the hekesh that we were talking about? Okay, so that would be the machlokas. Now, getting on, in fact, to the strange fact that the next Mishnah discusses exactly that mot yumad, we begin with, of course, the introduction, by now a famous introduction, available on Columbia Records from many years ago. There's a new recording, which I must tell you, I think the original recording is better. And it's together with Richie's Chazan grandfather. They put the grandson's Zok Te'elik HaMishnah on that original recording. So if you want to, you can listen to that one. But we've got a live version coming across right now. Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned. Here we go. Ah. Lo lechinam amru, godal ben beno, mi avi a'av. Hagonev nefesh mi Yisrael. So, the very next pasuk that was right there between Bekalel avi v'imo and the Maka avi v'imo is the gonev ishu mecharo v'nim tzibiyoto mot yumat. All right, so this is a little bit strange. It says somebody kidnaps a person and he sells him, and then he's found in his hand. I mean, so he couldn't have sold him if he's found in his hand. So we'd have to learn that as meaning we have Adim that saw that he had actually stolen him and had held him in his own rishus. Then mot yumat. Okay, so what would that mean? That he had to have been in that person's rishus, because it says dafka v'nimtza biyado. So to steal a person, in other words, if you kidnap somebody, how do you kidnap somebody? By locking them in their garage. Whatever. That's not considered to be a case of kidnapping that is mechayev misa. It would only be where you transfer that person to a property that you own and you actually took possession of him. Then you would be chayev misa if you're caught. Okay. And what's interesting is, says Reb Yehuda, so you would not be chayev, achach misenel rishuso, but you also would not be chayev unless you actually had used him for doing something for you. And that's because in Dvarim the pasuk reads, ki yimatze ish gonev nefesh mi echov b'nei Yisrael, v'hitamer bo mecharo. Oh my gosh, that's a whole new thing. V'hitamer bo means that you made use of him. V'hitamer is actually a lotion of avdut. So, okay, so you used that person and sold him. So therefore, says Reb Yehuda, you would actually need two things. It would have to be in your rishus, because it says v'nim tzibiyado, and would have to be that you were also hit amerbo, and then you went ahead and you sold him. Now, suppose, and this is a very modern issue. The contemporary issue is that always these divorced parents are being accused of kidnapping, right? Okay, so what is it then if you kidnap your own child? Hagonev et binot. So what would be the din? So Bishmael binot, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka says, you're chayev. The Chachamim say, if it's your own child, so then you're putter, which we'll see what the basis is in the Gemara. How about if you were gonev someone who was himself still partially an evet? So gonev misha chetzio evet, the chetzio ben chorin, says he had two partners in an evet. One of them was meshachar, the classic case of chetzio evet, chetzio ben chorin. So the din is, Rabbi Yehuda says, well, what's the difference? You're chayev. Chachamim say you're putter. So all of these things, we'll have to see what the machlokas is in the Gemara. Now, the Tanakhama did not say that you need to be mitamerbo. I mean, are you going to tell me that the Tanakhama disagrees with the Pusik? It says mitamerbo. Mot yumatz. How did the Tanakhama not mention mitamer? Dafka comes along, Rabbi Yehuda, and he says, no, you have to be mitamerbo. But Tanakhama lo boy imur. It's a beferish Pusik in the Torah. It's not whether you need itamer. It's what consists of itamer. The machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakhama is whether if you use the guy for, you ask them to bring a cup of water from the kitchen, is that considered to be vitamer? Or does vitamer mean an actual value of work that you would normally have to pay for, at least a shavar pruta? That's the machlokas. Imor pachot mi shavar pruta, ikabinayu. Is it just the use of, or is it the actual enslavement of making a person do valuable work for you without paying him? By Rabbi Yirmiyah. Okay, another question. You kidnapped somebody, and you sold him while he was asleep. What would be the din? Or you kidnapped someone who was pregnant, and you sold only the fetus, not the mother. So you sell the mother for purposes of this person taking possession of the child when the child is born. What's it then? So, I mean, my first question is basically, is this considered to be emor, proper emor or not? What? Emor? What are you talking about? You didn't say anything about emor in either of these cases. You said the guy was fast asleep, as a matter of fact. So what do you mean emor? Obviously, you're ignoring the emor completely, and you talked about selling the fetus. Now, how the heck would you have made use of that fetus? What could the fetus have done for you? So why are you asking me, derech emor? There is no emor. So typically, delek emor klal. There couldn't be any chiyuv over here, because there is no way to do emor. So what are you talking about? Not true. We are using, you're supposed to be using your imagination to figure out, okay, what is the Tana talking about? If there's a chiyav of emor, how would you do emor on a person who's asleep? Or how would you do emor on a fetus? So use your brains. We understand that you figured out what we're talking about. And the only question is whether that is considered to be a standard enough use that it would be called emor. So let's say in this case, the guy's fast asleep. You knocked him out with a sleeping potion, took him out of his home, carried him away, and now you've got a hostage. All right, you don't have a pillow, but this guy is a nice fat hostage since you haven't starved him to half to death yet. So you put your head on his tummy, and now you have a pillow. Is that considered to be a normal emor? Or that's not called emor? And what about the pregnant woman? Ah, that pregnant woman, fortunately, has got a very big tummy. Now, why does she have that big tummy? Because there's a baby in that tummy. And therefore, if the wind is blowing and you put that woman's tummy in front of the hole in the wall, which was the window, now you are getting a lot of benefit because, whew, man, could barely breathe from that wind. Now, if she didn't have that baby in her tummy, so use your imagination. I don't know, but figure out a crazy case. Okay, so now the question is that considered to be what the Torah means by emor? That's what I'm asking you, because that's not normal work. That's why I'm saying the question is, derech emor bekach or ein derech emor bekach? So yashen would mean that you put your head on him, zaga alei. The Isha was that you used her tummy in front of the wind. And I want to know, is that considered to be Emor? My new, I don't know. Take, you know what? Elio, I know he's got a whole list of all of those questions. Why don't you just keep it in your list? Turn it up on it. Ki yimatzei ish konev nefesh mi'echav. Okay, so one pasuk says that what we're talking about, this is the pasuk in Dvarim, that you find an ish. That seems to be only an ish who is gonev. But what about if a woman is a kidnapper? Then there's no chiyuv. So how do I know that there should be a chiyuv on an ish? Aminayin? Talmud lomar. It's normal pasuk. V'gonev ishu mechorot. Doesn't say who is gonev. That's our pasuk in Mishpatim. And over there it just says whoever. V'gonev ish. Whether male or female. But wait. That would be either a man or a woman who steals an ish. Okay? But that I understand. So ein le'ela ish. We have one pasuk of ish, who is gonev, and it wouldn't matter who it was that he stole, because it says, ki yimatzei ish gonev nefesh. So that nefesh could be any kind of nefesh. Even a woman, or a tumtum, or androgynous, whatever. And we have another pasuk that says, v'gonev ish. But that would include a woman. Fine. Or ish ashegon v'ish. But how do we know a woman who is gonevet, a woman? Where does it say that? Because the case where it's nefesh, it says ish gonev nefesh. And the case where it doesn't, it talks about a woman, it also says the object of the kidnapping is an ish, the gonev ish. So where's the pasuk that says that a woman who kidnaps a woman would be chayev? Talmud lomar, that's the extra pasuk that we have in the extra words that we have in the Isser, in the Devarim, where it says, Umeita ganavahu. Umeita ganavahu is specifically saying, whoever, whatever, I don't even hang what the case is, if it's a ganav of person, the ganav of any sex shall die. Okay, so that's our first pasuk. Tanya idach, ki yimatzei ish gonev nefesh mi'echav. So now, it says, anybody who steals a nefesh. All right, a nefesh would be any kind of nefesh. So that would mean whether the nefesh was male, whether the nefesh was female. It wouldn't matter whether the nefesh was a ger, eved, bishukhrar, a katan. Basically, it's any nefesh, we said, right? Okay, now, suppose ginavo velo micharo, micharo. Suppose, first of all, let's take a case. You kidnapped, but you never ended up selling him. You sold him, but the person is still yeshno birshuto. Now, there's two different ways of understanding what it means, yeshno birshuto. The simple way of understanding it over here, according to Rashi, and this is the way the Rambam brings it, is that he just was not delivered, right? So you sold him, but the buyer actually did not take delivery. But the other way of understanding it, according to some Rishonim, is that he's still in his own Rishos. So in other words, even if you sold him by putting him in, locking him in his garage, and now you arranged for the mafia to come to the garage and pick him up, because you got him in there, so you sold him, if he's still in his own Rishos, then you would not be chayiv. Okay, but in either of these events, whatever the halacha we're talking about over here is the kinezis pater. If mechoro la'aviv o la'achiv, now this is a pretty standard case, you kidnap somebody and you ransom him off to his own family, right? So now the family's willing to pay a premium, so you sell him back to his own father. You sell him back to his own brother. Or you sell him to one other relative or whatever. In all of those cases, you would still be chayev, which seems pretty obvious, but we'll see in a moment why it's not. But if he's gonevet avadim, then he's put. He has to be a free man. So a Tana came along. A Tana in this case doesn't mean the Tana of the bright. I mean, it's a person who says over prices, right? So these were like professional Brisa repeaters that used to go around from Beis HaMidrash to Beis HaMidrash, and they would make certain that people, because they would memorize all of the Brises, this would be like the Taimani janitor that used to work in Ponovich many years ago, so that the Taimani janitor, of course, knew the entire Pirush HaMishnayos of the Rambam by heart, and he knew the entire Mishnah Torah of the Rambam by heart, because that's what he learned back in Taiman. And there were no computers and no way to look up a Rambam if you were a stupid Ashkenazi who doesn't know the Rambam by heart. So you went, found the janitor, and you said, what's the Rambam say about this and this halacha, and where can I find it? Honestly. So these were the Tanas, right? I remember how shocked I was when I first arrived in Eretz Yisrael. Oh, my God. My first morning in Eretz Yisrael. A garbage truck drives by, and there's this Taimani on the garbage truck. They used to be open garbage trucks. They weren't like they are today with the machinery. They were just like big trucks that you just threw all of the garbage into. On top of all of this garbage is a guy with payas halfway down to his feet, with this long gray beard, wearing a white hat and white begadim. This guy looks like a malach. He's the garbage man. Like, oh, my God. All right, so I realized I'm in a different world. So in any event, the question over here is that the Tana said this over in front of Reb Sheshes, and Reb Sheshes says to him, that's ridiculous, because I was taught that Rabbi Shimon Omer, that the word me'echav means that you have to take him away from his family. And you're telling me that if he ransoms him to the family, that then he's chayav. That's crazy. You must have it wrong. Change the girsa of the braita that you say over, delete the word chayav, and insert the word patur. That's the only way that it works. Wait, I understand. What's the problem? You said that was Reb Shimon's shita. Maybe this bright is going like the Rabbanan. Why does it bother you? Maybe my kusha, Dilma or Reb Shimon or Rabbanan. No way. It can't be. Because since what we're talking about is a sifra over here, so then a sifri over here, so then it obviously is going according to Reb Shimon, because Reb Yochanan already explained. Stam matnitin is Rabbi Meir. Stam Tosefta is Rabbi Nechemia. Stam Sifra is Rabbi Yehuda. And Stam Sifrei is Rabbi Shimon. All of whom had learned by Rabbi Akiva. And all of the shitas that they're saying over are the shitas that they were makabel from Rabbi Akiva. Okay, but anyway, don't try to tell me that this Braita that you spoke about before, which I happen to know is a Braita in the Sifrei, and it doesn't say Omar or Omru Chachamim, it just says this is the halacha. That means it's a Stam Sifrei. So then it's Rabbi Shimon. And I was taught beferish that Rabbi Shimon holds the opposite. So don't try to tell me that there's a Machlokas the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon. You have got a wrong girsa. That's your problem. Okay, that's the end of today's exciting episode. And actually, we've got different episodes here, right? So we've gone through the two different inyanim about the Makah Avivimo, the Kalal Avivimo, the question of how that relates to the overall Isser of Lota Sifla Koto, which is on anybody, or Nasi Ba'amcha Lota Or, which is on anybody, when there would be a Chiev of Mammon, when there would be a Chiev of Malkas. We spoke about the difference between a Ben and an Acher. And, of course, the whole sugya was opened with the question of in a mokum of mitzvah, where the person that's acting as a shliach bezdin, would it be permissible for the ben to be acting in terms of klola and bracha? We ended up saying that, look, in practical terms, we will never put someone in that position. But if it's a meisid, we will. And we also got into the beginning of the sugya of the differences between the sale of a person that was captured, whether he was taken into Yerushalos, not taken into Yerushalos, is he being sold to family? That is to say, is this like a ransom kidnapping, or is this like a straight-out mafia kidnapping, you know, transferring over to the slave trade, whatever? This is the beginning of the sugya that we dealt with today, and we examined the mikores that are in different places, both in Mishpatim, we spoke about Kedoshim to you in terms of the Makom Mikalel, and we're speaking about the psukim that we find in Dvarim, Legabe, the Mechira and Amira in a human slave trade or a kidnapping.